Yes.
Order now.
How's Lee? How's Lee?
Very well. How are you doing, Maria?
Good.
Yeah?
Good morning.
I think the first thing we're going to do, there's nobody here. Is there anyone that has anything they want to bring up first before we start?
Yeah, Gene is out in the lobby.
All right, well, have you all had a chance to read this? No?
Yeah, well, not front to back, but yeah.
Okay.
Has it changed from the last one?
The disability?
Yeah. Has it changed? Remember, we had one of these cases, I forget.
Oh, well, this is a different person, so it's...
Yeah, but it's the same. Oh, this is the particular...
So this is the specific. So the bottom line is, you know, after somebody files, then, you know, it goes to Lee, and Lee gets an outside, you know, position to look and give their assessment, and, I mean, you know, more of your opinion, but the guy's, you know, waiting for a heart transplant, and, you know, and he's chugging along. So I guess really what this is we have a meeting to approve it, which means that he can start collecting his pension without a penalty, right? I mean, is that the bottom line of this, or is there still...
If you find today that he's entitled, then this would be the effective date.
Right.
Of the beginning of the payments, and the benefit is provided for in the ordinance, what he would receive, so really not penalty involved.
Right.
It's just what the benefit is provided in the ordinance. Is he coming, do we know?
He's here, I think, yeah.
Oh, he's out there, okay.
So I just wanted to have a quick discussion before he walks in.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of weird to talk a problem about.
Right.
If I could just ask of Lee real quick. I think I need to refamiliarize myself with the ordinance again. But what is the test? What do we base our decision on?
Well, he's entitled, I'll start off, I'll go through all that before we, once he comes in, I'll go through it, and then I can answer any questions. But to answer your question now, it's that he has the burden of proof to establish by greater weight of the evidence, just over 50%, that he is totally and permanently disabled from performing as a general employee for the city.
Over 50%, he's got to prove by...
That's right, just the greater weight of the evidence.
Is that preponderance, or is that...
It's preponderance, greater weight, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. And we will not, that's really going to be the only issue before the board on this one, because he's applying for not in line of duty. Now, if you were asking for in line of duty, that would be another issue. We don't have that issue before us.
Sorry, I interrupted.
No. I just, you know, wanted to make sure that if anybody wanted to discuss something before we bring him in. I mean, you know, I've gone through it all. I mean, you know, I see what's going on, but...
Yeah, I say, I'll just have a few preliminary remarks on, well, what we just talked about, the provision of the ordinance, the procedures we're following, and the general law that's applicable.
Yeah. Lee gives a lot of guidance on disability stuff, but, you know, we can make the final vote. That's right.
Well, that's right. You guys have a tough job. I don't have a vote.
Yeah. If I may even continue, it's that last one that we had. Was that in line? That wasn't in line of duty, was it? Remember the last one? I forget the gentleman's name.
No, it was also
not in line.
So, you know.
Yeah. So basically, the same test as that last. Yeah. That last.
Mm-hmm. Right. We ready?
Pull your car downstairs. Assumed it was yours at any rate.
Yeah, hard to miss that one.
Stegemeyer, is that how he says the same?
Stigmeyer, is that it?
Stigmeyer.
Grab a seat right over there.
Morning.
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 I was that high, I'm gonna not the same time as my...
Well, Lee, if you wanna start off here with Jean.
Okay, I would have some initial comments on the ordinance provisions that are applicable to your application, also the procedures that are being followed by the board, and the principles of general law that apply to this, the board's consideration of your claim.
Okay.
All right, we'll start procedurally. We're operating under the claims procedures adopted by the board. We're in the initial hearing phase of those procedures. Under the initial hearing phase, this is the first time that you've had an opportunity to discuss the documents that have been submitted up to this point. You haven't been able to otherwise because of the sunshine laws, and your consideration of the claim today would simply be based on the documents that have been submitted to you and any comments that the claimant may have. We won't be taking live testimony under oath or anything further today. Should you determine that Mr. Stegmeyer has carried his burden of proof by the greater weight of the evidence, just over 50% in establishing entitlement, then today would be the effective date of detention. Should you determine that you need additional evidence before you, then we would need to identify that to Mr. Stegmeyer, and he can come back and present that further evidence to you to give him every opportunity to prove up the case. That can be done in a continuation of this informal proceeding or in a formal hearing, should we get to that part, should we get to that point. Any questions on the procedures?
Nope.
Okay. Mr. Stegmeyer filed his disability application, as I know you all are aware, on May 2nd of 2016. And he is asking for consideration of a not line of duty disability pension under section 43-69 of your pension ordinance, and that is specifically under paragraph 2 of that section. Now, in order for you to find that Mr. Stegmeyer is entitled to a benefit, he must establish to you that he is totally and permanently disabled to the extent that he's unable to render useful and efficient service as a general employee for Ocala. If you make that determination, then that would be the only issue before you today, because it is a request for not line of duty pension, so you won't have a causation issue to consider. Also, you would need to find that none of the exclusionary factors apply to his claim that are in paragraph 3 of the ordinance. I've reviewed those, and I've reviewed all of the evidence submitted to date, including all the medical reports, and I don't find that any of those would be applicable in this situation. The only one that I did give some significant consideration to is the pre-existing condition exclusion. But I didn't, I mean, we can hear from Mr. Stegmeyer on this. He worked here almost 10 years, came here, did full duty over 10 years, and so I didn't see evidence that he had these specific impairments time prior to his employment here. Now, the three principles of general law that are applicable to this, and these are the ones that should ever end up in court, the judge would look to determine whether to affirm your action or to remand it back to you for, with instructions. One is that your decision needs to be supported by competent and substantial evidence, where, really in this case, where it's a medical claim, that's, you've got to have evidence, as we do, from qualified physicians in the area. Secondly, you need to comply with the essential requirements of law. That means applying the provisions of your pension ordinance to the evidence before you, as well as principles of general law. And third, we're required to accord procedural due process to Mr. Stegmaier. That means having your rules in writing and following your rules. And those are the claims procedures that we referred to earlier. If there's no questions, do you have any questions, Mr. Stegmaier?
Not here.
Then under your rules, the next day, trustees have any questions?
No.
Okay, under the rules then, Mr. Stegmaier has an opportunity to make any statement to the board that he would like for up to 15 minutes, and then it will be open for board discussion and any questions the board may have.
It was a surprise to me too to have these heart problems. I mean, it's been a hard thing to deal with and my family and not working. I've last 32 years and haven't been able to do it since then. It's been very hard and can't do much with my family. Quality of life has come back a little bit since they put the pump in and keep the blood flowing and stuff, but July still, I'm the boatsman, I would go out in the woods and swimming pools. I can't do any of that kind of stuff anymore. I can't take a shower. Got my wife wrapping me up. It's kind of hard to do it by myself. And I've been getting by. My family's been there for me to help. Just dealing with what I got to deal with and trying to stand strong. It's been hard on me. I mean, it's hard on my family. But like I said, I am on the list for a transplant. I got blood work done last week, and everything's looking good. So it is. Fingers crossed.
I think the medical records, and remember, you have two considerations, total and permanent. On the total issue, because the city terminated Mr. Stegmaier for medical reasons, under case law in Florida, the board would be stopped from finding it's not total, by virtue of the fact the city terminated him for medical reasons. But you do have the issue of permanency still before you to determine.
Dad, Bernie.
Questioning of the claimant. Have you applied for Social Security disability?
Yes, I have.
Where does that stand?
I receive it.
You are receiving.
Yeah, they approved that the first time.
Once discussion and questions are finished, then the appropriate action would be for the trustee to put forth a motion. It would be you either find that he is totally and permanently disabled based on the evidence, or not.
I make a motion that the claimant's request for a disability be granted.
I can second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous.
Thank you.
Sorry the process takes so long, but
I make it feel better. I was nervous.
Good luck.
Yeah.
I will prepare an order and send it for the chairman's signature, but the effective date will be today,
okay,
being the day that the board determined your entitlement. And the actuary should be contacted to calculate your benefits.
Okay.
And
is that a, that's not really, but is it retroactive from when I was?
No, it begins today.
Begins today. Yeah, no retroactive.
Right. Now, you, given where we are, you probably wouldn't get your first check the first of next month, probably the following month, but that check will include retroactive payments back to today's date.
Okay. So that'd be like January you're talking about?
I, at this point, by the time it's all filed and stuff.
Depends on how fast we can get it back from the actuary. We get the final back from the actuary, it really kind of just depends on them. So we'll get it out, myself and Alicia will get it out soon.
And we want to find out the amount I'll get every month. The actuary.
Yeah, it could be a couple of weeks and we're going to work on it starting today, but I'll get your stuff out and it'll be a couple of weeks.
Now, the actuary, who's that?
Foster and Foster.
Okay, so I'm done with the ones that serve so good. A law firm that set it all up. Christian and DR.
Right.
That's me right there.
Most good to meet you.
Now, you'll have several numbers calculated because you have two optional forms of benefit that you would have an opportunity to choose in addition to the normal form, and Foster will have all those numbers for you to take a look.
All right, so that'd be mailed on to me, I'll go through it and sign it, send it back. All right, I appreciate all the effort you guys gave me and stand behind me. Very appreciated.
Good luck.
All right, thank you. Are you done with it?
Yeah, we are. This.
Do I take this or?
I
have one home, so.
Yeah, you can just leave it then, and all the copies that the trustees have will be shredded.
Okay.
And there'll be one copy kept for the pension records.
Thank you again.
You guys have a good day.
You too.
See ya. I guess next is Foster and Foster here, do you know?
No, next is Templeton.
Templeton?
Can verify that.
I saw Candy out there.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm sorry.
I'll go grab.
Good morning.
Good morning, how are you doing?
Good, very good.
My name is Andy Berkeley. I'm from the Templeton Global Equity Group based in Fort Lauderdale. So thank you for having me today. I'm here to talk about the international equity portfolio that you have invested with us. So I thought I would spend just a couple minutes going through a little bit of the philosophy and the team and give a few updates on that. We'll walk through the performance and some of the outlook in terms of what we're seeing. So I know 30 minutes is a lot of time. We'll certainly stick to that. So let me just start on page four and kind of walk through Templeton investments. Total AUM today is $732 billion. We are the third sleeve from the left-hand side, so we're the Templeton Global Equity Group. This is the Sir John Templeton group that was founded many decades ago. Our AUM is about $96.1 billion today, which is down about 10%. Over the last calendar year, largely attributed to no new inflows, essentially. So we've had kind of your standard redemptions for business reasons, but net sales have been slow, kind of similar to the industry, I would say. in terms of allocations to passive and other, you know, types of investments. We're essentially core value, so that we're not really trying to replicate a benchmark. We're really just looking for value out there, and I'll talk a little bit about how we find value in global equities. I'll jump ahead just a couple pages and just a little bit more on the AUM on page 6, just to give you a sense of where that $100 billion is. About $50 billion is invested in global equities, $34 billion is in non-U.S., so outside the U.S., and then $12 billion is other, which is generally Asian specific mandates. And in terms of breakout, retail and institutional, it's roughly 50-50, and that's historically been the case as well. So if you go to page 8, just to refresh your memory or go over a couple of the tenets of our investment philosophy, really it comes down to three things: value, patience, and bottom-up. So value for us is essentially just looking for companies that are being mispriced by the market today for any number of reasons. So it could be that a company is out of favor because the industry is out of favor. It could be because the economy is sluggish, but you know, we think things may start to pick up. It could be a product recall. We'll talk a little bit about Samsung in just a minute. We own Samsung. It's one of the biggest holdings in the portfolio. So that's kind of a company going through a bit of a micro crisis right now in terms of a specific product where we still believe in the company. We still think there's a lot of good opportunities there. So any one of these things may create value on a short-term basis. And that's where patience comes in. Everything we do is on a rolling five-year time horizon. So, you know, we have a good track record. If you look at rolling five-year time horizons, our performance has been, you know, pretty good over time. You know, those are these periods of underperformance, which I'll talk about today, which we've had a little bit of a challenging period. But over time, you know, value we believe in, and we think it does work. And then bottom-up stock picking, we are bottom-up investors. So it's a 100-stock portfolio, roughly. And we build that from the stock level, really, where we're finding value today. So let me just talk about the team briefly on page 9. So there's really been no changes at the senior level or the PM level. This has been pretty consistent. The CIO, Norm Boersma, he has about 30 years of industry experience. Our two main offices are in Nassau and Fort Lauderdale. So Nassau is really where the retail funds are run out of, and Fort Lauderdale is where the institutional portfolios are managed. The director of portfolio management is Cindy Sweeting. She's the actual portfolio manager on this strategy, and she's been with Templeton for over 20 years. She has 32 years of industry experience. And the other senior investment person is Heather Arnold, who's the director of research. So she's essentially in charge of putting names on our buy list, essentially, or the investing prospect. Let me fast forward just a little bit, and I'll just talk a little bit on page 12 about our process, and I won't spend more than a minute on this. But being value investors, I think this is a good flow diagram in terms of how our investment process works. Essentially, what we do is we're looking for identifying potential bargains. So our analysts are out there screening the globe for the best possible opportunities. They do in-depth fundamental analysis, so deep dive modeling, deep dive talking to management. And then number 3 is probably the most important thing, the most unique for us, which is the presentation of the investment thesis, which happens in an open public forum. The analysts will bring the idea to the table and being debated. And we have an interesting role, which is called the devil's advocate. And the devil's advocate is essentially another analyst that will take the exact opposite side of the argument and try to poke holes in it and say, you know, what have you missed? Why is this person recommending the opposite? And really just getting the idea out. And when that all flows through, that's when an idea essentially will enter the portfolio. So with that, let me fast forward a little bit, and I'll go to the next tab and talk a little bit about performance and positioning and what we're seeing. So in the near term, a bit of a good news. We had a good quarter. So the third quarter was one of outperformance for us. You see the fund net of fees was up 7.27. Our primary benchmark is the MSCI All Country World ex-US index, which was up about 7%. That leaves us roughly flat year-to-date, but still significantly trailing the index, which is up about 6.3%. This is as of the end of September. I can tell you over the last 6 weeks, October into November, we've closed that gap even more. So now we're trailing by about 400 basis points. Our performance essentially has turned this year in July after the Brexit vote. We've seen when the UK decided to leave the European Union and the markets had a lot of volatility, They came down, the international markets really bounced back very sharply. And one thing in particular happened is that we saw a rotation in the market into more cyclically oriented value stocks, which is really where we're positioned. And since July, we've seen our performance bounce back pretty significantly. Now, that hasn't been enough really to impact the 1, 3, and 5-year numbers, which are still trailing. But we do think we are at potentially a pretty important inflection point. The other thing that happened in the end of the second quarter and the third quarter is that interest rates started to move higher ever so slightly. Not massively, more recently they started to move higher. And one cohort in the market that had been doing very, very well is those kind of bond proxies, those dividend yielding stocks, telecom, utilities, consumer staples. We've been massively underweight those areas for the last couple of years. Just because we don't find any value on that long-term 5-year horizon. So even though yield and dividend is very popular today, you're paying a lot for it, and it's very expensive. And we don't think the risk-reward is justified in that. So not to make excuses, but that's one of the reasons why we've underperformed over the last couple of years, is because that's been an area of the market that's really done well, and we really haven't been well represented there. But again, we see that changing ever so slowly here. So let me walk you through a little bit of that, you know, kind of where we are, and you can see that more specifically through page 21. And I'll walk you through the current weightings and then kind of what our thesis is there and what our view is on some of these sectors. So what you're looking at on page 21 is the portfolio weights versus the index. And again, the index is that all country world outside of the U.S. So for example, financials represent 21.64 of the index. We're at 22.02. So we're right about at the benchmark in terms of financials. Financials is an area that has been a drag on performance, especially banks and especially European banks. So we've been involved in European banks for a number of years now. We first went overweight European banks almost 5 years ago in 2012, 2011-2012 during the European debt crisis. That performed actually very well coming out of that period as those stocks re-rated. But more recently, they've come under pressure over the last, call it 12 months or so, for a combination of reasons. And one of them was that Brexit vote, that UK decision to leave the European Union. So in terms of our European financial exposure, we've moved that overweight from a 9% overweight down to about a 6% overweight more recently. Because we do acknowledge that there are risks and concerns there, even if we are finding a longer-term value. So we still do think the situation is slowly improving. With interest rates moving higher, we do think that should be the area that we want to be represented in. Healthcare is one of the bigger overweights in the portfolio, and again, that's been the case for a while. We're at 14.4 versus 8.6. Again, that's a story of the last several years. You know, it's an area we were overweight a number of years ago when Obamacare really kind of first started being introduced, and that was a concern for healthcare. It drove the valuations down, allowed us to get overweight that area. Did well until the last year and a half, and a lot of the political rhetoric kind of hurt healthcare again. You saw the ratings come back down. So and one of the outcomes of the election for us in our portfolio, we talked a lot about healthcare really over the last month, really, because we're so overweight that area. That's probably the one that would be the most impacted by depending on which candidate came into office. And our portfolio has actually benefited from the outcome in that case. Not only because of Obamacare, but we actually have a lot of pharmaceuticals and biotech companies, and the drug pricing issues around that would have been a concern. So, you know, what we've seen since the election is really just that political suppression in terms of evaluation of those ideas have come off, but the fundamentals really haven't changed, and that was our thesis all along. Our analysts kept saying, you know, these companies are delivering on earnings, they have good fundamentals, and they're just re-rating because of this political overhang. So, in our portfolio, healthcare is probably the biggest area that's been impacted, by the outcome of the election.
So, is the thought you're going to stand your ground, or are you just going to wait it out?
Well, you know, kind of. If you asked us 2 months ago, before the election, when we were talking about this, we had a lot of debates, and you know, our analysts were saying, again, the pipelines are still very robust. They have a lot of drugs. These are good fundamental companies. The multiples have just come down 3 or 4 points. And you say, why? And the only thing we could really point to is the election overhang and potentially more regulation. So, you know, at this point with the alleviation of that, if anything, we're likely to increase our allocation because those political concerns will come off. So it's one area we've actually seen, lag the market a bit over the last year and a half, as some of those areas like staples and utilities have done much better, where we don't find opportunities. So yeah, if anything, it's probably likely to go up a bit. Energy is an area that we've been overweight for some time, certainly since the end of last year. That's been a swing performance factor. In 2015, energy didn't really hurt our performance because we had good stock picking. We were about benchmark allocation. This year, it's definitely helped our performance quite a bit. So we are pretty bullish on oil prices. We do think they're going to continue to move higher. Most of our exposure tends to be in the big, independent, diversified names around the world. So if you think about like a BP or a Royal Dutch in the UK or Eni in Italy, some of these names that are kind of much more diversified than just a small E&P company, things like that. Those tend to be more small cap, a little higher beta names. I won't go through each one, but down on the bottom is just to kind of emphasize that point again about where we're not and the idea that we don't mirror the benchmark. We actually have a very high active share, meaning that where we find value, we tend to go to it. So as I mentioned on the bottom, we don't find value in staples, we don't find value in real estate, we don't find value in utilities, and we don't put any of our money in those areas. So we don't just put money in an area because we have the next benchmark. If we think they're expensive, we're not afraid to be different than the index. And again, that's been more of a swing factor in performance more recently in our favor. So let me just touch on that country, and I'll open it up for questions at that point. So on page 22, we are overweight Europe. We are overweight the United Kingdom. So that was an area similar to the debate we had around the U.S. election and healthcare. We had a very similar debate around the Brexit vote and the U.K. referendum, before and after. So certainly before, we were probably like most people, we were in the camp that the UK would not leave the European Union and kind of calm our heads with prevail. We can throw out all polling and statistics and betting data these days. We know it. They're just not very accurate anymore. But post-Brexit, after we saw the outcome, I guess we put our holdings in the UK in two buckets. The first bucket are really large multinational companies that don't do a lot of business in the UK. They tend to do a lot of their end business in the U.S. or emerging markets or Europe. These are these large healthcare companies, large energy companies. It doesn't really matter that they're based in the U.K. They can really be based anywhere in terms of where they're selling their products. And the benefit they've had is the pound has gotten very, very weak. So with the pound really coming down quite a bit, if anything, those companies have done better in terms of their businesses. The other bucket are companies that are likely to be impacted. So for most of those, they're going to be financials and they're going to be banks. So we did make some changes. We sold one position in particular. We sold Lloyds, which is a big UK retail bank. So being that they have just a specific UK retail banking presence, we felt there was more risk in that. And we moved into some of the areas that were a little more geographically diversified. And we sold Credit Suisse in Europe because we felt like, again, there was a little bit more regulation overhang and a little bit more risk in that name. So we wanted to take the opportunity to really kind of move up the quality spectrum. While prices were a little bit lower over the summer, and reallocate our positions into some of the stronger names. So the end result of that is we went from a 9% overweight to a 6% overweight, as I said. So still overweight, we think there's a lot of value there, just not as away, as far out there as we were before. In Asia, we're a little bit below the benchmark. Most of that's going to come from Japan. That's kind of a long-held thesis for us at Templeton. We've been underweight Japan for many, many years. We see the markets in Japan move on the currency, so kind of when the currency gets a little weaker, companies tend to do a little bit better. Currency gets a little stronger, companies tend to sell off. Right now we're in a little bit more of weakening phases. The end result really for us in terms of Japan is that we don't feel like there's a lot of corporate restructuring going on. So Abenomics, the new kind of Abe plan that's out there, that's the next phase of Abenomics, is basically getting companies to be a little bit more shareholder friendly, to do a little bit more restructuring. When our analysts talk to the companies over there, they still feel like they're not in working in shareholders' best interest. They're not doing things really to make the companies more lean, more profitable. It tends to be more for kind of existing employees and corporate culture in terms of refining things. And that's a slow process, and that's continued to kind of be a slow process. So that's why we've been underweight there. Most of our Asian exposure is going to come in two countries. It's going to come in China and South Korea. And those are both emerging markets. So that actually makes up the bulk of our emerging market exposure on the bottom too. So the 17.5 on the bottom is about a little bit over 13% of that just comes from China and South Korea. And those are really plays on Asian demographics and Asian consumer. So when you think about emerging markets, we like to think about them in two groups. Really a kind of consumer emerging markets, and you have commodity industrial emerging markets. So commodity industrial emerging markets are most of your Latin American companies, Australia. They produce just pull a lot of stuff out of the ground, and they're selling that into big infrastructure projects. After China kind of slowed down in its economic growth several years ago, we felt like that thesis really didn't have a lot of long-term trajectory on it. But we do like the demographic theme, and we do like the Asian consumer theme. It's the idea that there's a lot more middle-class Asians consuming, people in rural China kind of moving to the city centers. So most of our investments there are going to be things like life insurance, telecom, healthcare. So more of a play on the consumer, not big industrial conglomerates, not big commodity plays, things like that.
You talk a little bit about the underweight relative to the benchmark in yen.
Yeah, so that's come up. If you looked at that about 18 months ago, it would have been about 13%. And EM would have been about 19 or 20. So an EM has done better this year. So the weight in the emerging market's gone up to almost 23. So as that's climbed, we've climbed as well, but we've also increased our exposure a bit. So we're moving it up. We're likely to continue to move it up. So we do find opportunities, again, mostly in Asia, probably not in Latin America. But I don't suspect we're going to be overweight anytime soon. And then the final slide I'll just leave you on, if you go two ahead and just look at page 24, to look at some of the characteristics of the portfolio on several different valuation metrics. So we list four or five different valuation metrics here. If you look at price to earnings, price to cash flow, price to book value, all of those characteristics, you can see that we're significantly below the benchmark. So representative of value investor or value portfolio, you would like to see these statistics being at a 15-20% discount to the overall benchmark, which they are. And I would note the price to cash flow number is probably one of the biggest discounts that we've seen in many, many years in terms of our portfolio to the overall index. So again, our companies, we do find very attractively valued today. There are areas of the market that are pretty expensive and pretty crowded. We don't think we're in those, and we think what we've seen in performance over the last couple of months is actually reflecting the value that's out there. So with that, I'll kind of open up to questions. I did include a packet in the back. I can spend a few minutes going through some of those slides if you're interested, but it really kind of blows up some of our outlook in terms of financials and oil and kind of what we're seeing a little bit on the bigger picture story. So you can kind of tell me where you want to go from there.
Are you finding, as value has kind of come back into favor a little bit more this year, I would assume that's going to be something that's going to kind of be a little bit of a tailwind for you all moving forward as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
it had been a headwind.
Yeah, I mean, let me just look at a couple of slides in the back just to, leave you on two or three of those to give you a sense of, the impact. So slide number one essentially is, why we think value potentially could outperform, and just give you some of the sense of it. I mentioned a few of the factors already. We've been in this kind of uncertain, low growth, flight to safety environment for a long time. If we see that releasing a bit, that's definitely going to help our portfolio quite a bit. And just to give you a sense of the magnitude, on page two, here we show value versus growth. So kind of your two traditional ways of looking at investment style, growth investors versus value investors. And this is a rolling annualized performance. So basically anything above zero means that value is outperforming growth on a trailing 10-year period. So you can see, that chart goes back to, I think, 1985. About 85% of the time, value outperforms growth on a trailing 10-year period. We actually have this data back to the 30s. And it's the same statistics. About 85% of the time, value will tend to do better over the long term, as you would suspect. Every once in a while, you'll go through these kind of droughts. And the last one that we went through was in 2000. And ironically, that was the dot-com bubble. That was the technology, media, telecom craze. And it was the exact opposite economic environment that we're in today. It was euphoria over growth. It was driving people into growth stocks. It was kind of earnings are going to grow to the moon. You're never going to get corrections in these multiples. And kind of lowly value, economically sensitive, old stodgy stocks didn't do particularly well. And that's where we were positioned. And that hurt for a little while until it didn't. You know, and then that came back. Today it's the exact opposite, as I said. Today we're almost in this growth starved world where you have a few pockets of growth stocks that have done well and can generate growth, and they've left the cyclical stocks trailing behind. And we think that, again, at some point will just get so crowded and so expensive that you start to see that reverse. And that's kind of what we've seen this year. Values outperform growth marginally year to date. It's kind of fluctuated, but by a small margin. We haven't participated in that as much because of our European financials. So if you backed out kind of that European financial weighting, we have participated in that. Now we do own it, so that does count. And, you know, we do think there's reasons to be there. So that's been the one area I would say that hasn't participated in value yet. But with interest rates rising, that should start to help. And you can see that kind of on page 4. I'll jump ahead one. That's value versus growth. So this is just another way to show that phenomenon of value tends to outperform over time. But you'll go through these stretches every once in a while. As I mentioned in 98, 99, it's a dot-com bubble. That was a short period of very sharp underperformance. This has been a longer period of more muted underperformance until recently. So it's just kind of been a little more drawn out. It's still painful, but it's been a little more drawn out than back in that period. And then the other thing that's impacted us to a certain extent is if you look on page 9, and it's not exactly applicable to this portfolio because this is a non-U.S. portfolio, but it kind of shows a similar theme, and that's U.S. versus non-U.S. performance. And the bars on the top is when non-U.S. stocks outperform, and the bottom is when U.S. stocks outperform. So it's a similar kind of thing. We've been in this period really where it's been all about U.S., it's been all about growth, it's been all about quality. That theme has just been so dominant, and it's lasted so long. You know, we would think you don't want to be positioned there. You want to be positioned to the other side of it if this rubber band is stretched and about to turn, essentially. And then just a couple thoughts on, you know, if you look at page 10, one of the reasons why, you know, particularly we do think Europe is set to move back. If you look at that chart, I always find that very interesting. That's the percentage of earnings that are coming out of the U.S. and the percentage of earnings that are coming out of Europe. So right now, that gap is as wide as we've ever seen. You know, European earnings are below 25% of the index. U.S. are above 55%. That tends to mean revert over time. You can see every time that's gotten that wide, it'll tend to close. So our belief is if you look at this chart 3 to 5 years from now, that's more likely to mean revert, not continue to widen out over that time. And that would certainly help our performance.
Am I correct that you manage about $14 to $15 million, right? $14 to $15 million.
That's right. Brian Cayley is the relationship manager on the account. He's sorry he couldn't be here. He just had a baby girl on that Friday, so.
It was cryptic when he sent the email. I was hoping everything was okay, but that's
yeah. He's been kind of right on the cusp. So yeah, it's his second. So. I make fun of him because I have 5, under 8. So.
Oh, wow.
So, two is like, come on.
Told me we can get the 4, right?
How have your cohorts performed during the periods that we've discussed?
Yeah, so I think we've been, you know, pretty close to what we've seen in our peers in terms of value. You know, that's probably been the biggest thing. So if you look at specific to value and non-U.S. value in particular, that's going to tend to lead you to Europe. It's going to tend to lead you to banks, financials, things like that. So, you know, we've probably fallen down in the rankings a bit just because of the performance over the last year. But longer term, you know, the numbers are still, you know, very solid. But, you know, our 1-3 year numbers are certainly impacted by what's happened in the last 12 months in terms of our performance. If you went back to kind of mid-2015, all our time periods would have been above the benchmarks. So the last year has kind of impacted that, and it's been, you know, pretty crazy times.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I do. What do we pay you to manage our sleeve of money?
You know, Brian's probably the better one to talk about that. I don't know the exact share class and fees.
It's around, I want to say 70.
It's probably right in that. 70 basis points. Yeah. I don't know the exact number though, so. We can get that for you for sure. Yeah.
I haven't seen any notices of any of your summits that you used to have yearly.
Yeah, so they moved those to New York, unfortunately, I guess a few years ago, or maybe fortunately, I don't know, but I know they used to do them down here in Florida just for the Templeton Group.
Right.
So now they do it for the broader Franklin Templeton Group, which is, you know, the main headquarters in San Mateo, and then we have offices all over the place, so they've decided to move it to New York over the last few years. We're happy to have you. And
well, so the last one I went to, and it was, you know, very informative about what was going on in China, but that was several years ago.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about all the sleeves that, right, I mentioned in the beginning, so all seven or eight of those sleeves are representative, and, you know, like Michael Hosenstoff, I don't know if you know that name, but he's our global macro, global bond guy.
The guru.
The guru of all that, you know, so we'll talk about, you know, what he's finding in the Czech Republic or in Turkey or...
Well, it's interesting. Some of the people there, I mean, I talked to them how things are changing with cable TV and telecom. I mean, they're on top of that stuff. And
yeah.
I haven't seen any invites of any of those.
Now, why would you have such an interest in those areas?
Maybe because that's where our world is changing.
Yeah, because you work in those areas?
Yeah, I work in those areas for sure.
I'll talk to Brian when I get back and make sure you're on the list. It's in May, so it'll be May next year.
Just wondering where, you know, your thoughts are with China, where they're going.
Yeah, I mean, bro, there's one slide in there that shows the China economic growth. If you look on the
slide,
I think it's on page 17, 18. And that's largely a firm view, I guess, is this idea that the transition is progressing and is going to be beneficial longer term, and our view as well. So I'm not saying we disagree with that. I'm just saying it's kind of broad. If you talk to our global macro team or our bond team, if you look at the spot on page 18, you know, China's gone from this double-digit economic miracle of 12-14% growth, not sustainable. You know, we did a study or paper on this not too long ago where we looked at, you know, the history of mankind. You know, it's very difficult to make 12-14% growth for that long. So it's a sharp adjustment. You know, coming down to 7 from 14, you're going to feel a lot of bumps along the way. But one of the things they have done is they've really moved to more of a services-based economy. So services represents like over 50% of the economy now, which is up, you know, from about 20% 15, 20 years ago.
So I guess in my mind, services requires a middle class, doesn't it?
That's right. Yeah. So you see kind of wages, you know, moving up and, you know, they're not booming, but moving in the right direction. So like I said, the way we're invested there, life insurance is telecom, healthcare, all those things to support that middle class. And then the valuation is right on the next slide, if you're interested. It just kind of shows how far down the valuation has come in China and some of the emerging markets over the last several years. And it looks to be, you know, bottoming out right now. So I thank you for your time. You know, hopefully we have stronger results to report next time, but I think we're, you know, moving in the right direction.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice day.
Can I just check? It's 78 basis points.
All right.
Well, it's a pleasure to see everyone again for the second time here. As you know, as we were talking about earlier, Rose is currently on sabbatical. As I mentioned, not just sitting around watching TV. She's doing a little bit of education along the way as well. Her and her family were able to take a trip in October as well, so I know they had a good time. I saw her at our conference in Arizona in October, and they had just gotten back from the trip, and they'd had a very good time. So she's enjoying the time off before she is thrust back into duty for a very long time. As Larry Marino, one of the senior folks, retires, and she works out a lot of accounts with Larry, and so those are all being transitioned to Rose. And so this was, as you mentioned, Arnie, the last chance she had. If she was going to do it, it was going to be now. So maybe in 10 years, when I hit my 15-year number, I'll do the same thing as well. But anyways, I want to run through the markets real quick. Not get into too much detail unless you'd like to, and then we can get into some of the more specific portfolio information. So I am behind tab 1 on page 1, the third quarter 2016 investment performance. So if we look at the green box on the left-hand side, you can see for the third quarter, which is going to be that first column there, the third column there, the quarter to date, it was a positive quarter for global equity markets. So you can see the MSCI World was up just shy of 5%. Here in the U.S., as measured by the Russell 3000, up just shy of 4.5%. And really the place to be throughout this year, if you go down to the bottom, emerging markets up 9% for the quarter and up over 16% for the year. As Andy mentioned, I think part of some of the underperformance they've maybe realized this over the last really 9 months or so has probably been from a little bit of their underweight in emerging markets as well. As you can see, it's up about 16%. Moving down in fixed income, the Barclays Capital Aggregate up about 50 basis points for the quarter and almost 6% for the year. I think if you sat down and asked anybody in this room or anybody at our firm or anywhere else if we were going to get 6% out of fixed income this year, we all probably would have laughed and thought you were crazy. But nevertheless, that's the case, and that's come back a little bit. October, I can't call the exact numbers, but that number's closer to 5% year-to-date through October, but still, in the environment that we're in, to get 6% out of bonds is certainly a welcome sign for sure. Down the page there, below the Barclays Capital Aggregate would be global fixed income. That's the Citigroup non-U.S. WGB. And you can see, again, similar to the U.S., up about 60 basis points for the quarter, but year-to-date far outperforming the U.S. at 14%. And then as we move down, NCREIF NPI, that's the real estate index, up just shy of 2% and 6% for the year, maybe a little bit more muted than it has been over the last 5 years or so, even since the global financial crisis, but still showing positive results. And private equity, this data has lagged, unfortunately, so it only shows one quarter's worth of beta for 2016, but private equity up just about 80 basis points. But long-term, if you go all the way out to the right-hand side over 3, 5, 10-year periods, all above 10% out of private equity. Any questions? Okay, I'm going to flip now to tab 2 here, and I'm going to go to page 21. And I hate where they put the binding, and I've tried so hard to get it to where the page numbers don't get cut off, but unfortunately that seems to be the case almost every time I open one of these. But if we go to page 21, you can see for the quarter, you finished at about $126,231,000. That was an increase of about $4 million quarter over quarter. Year to date for the 9 months ended September 30th, the portfolio is up about $8.5 million, and you can see that's a combination of investment income and investment appreciation from your investments. Page 24, this is your asset allocation versus the target. And really nothing to speak of here. Everything is in line with their policy. Actually, I'm head on with what the policy targets are, with maybe the notable exception that you're a little bit underweight to that alternatives bucket. Really coming from GTAA, the Wellington, and that, as I recall, you terminated PIMCO, which had not done very well for quite some time, and so that's probably where some of that underweight has come. The good news is you hired Wellington, and as we'll see in just a minute, they've done very well since you hired them. I was here for that meeting. That was the one meeting I was here for when we had Invesco and Wellington in, and I think we decided to hire Invesco, and then there was, I think, an issue with some of the contracts and everything like that, but still, both of those products are great, and the Wellington product has been, we've actually had several clients go into the Wellington product, and it's done very well. I'm going to move back several pages here to page 29. So if you look at the top of the page, it was a very good quarter for the plan. These are gross of fees. The net of fee numbers are a few pages back, but we'll focus on these gross of fee numbers here. So for the quarter, you can see the total fund composite was up just north of 4%, outpacing the policy index by a little bit more than 50 basis points for the quarter. Year to date, a little bit below the policy index, but still very solid results, up about 6.7%. Of course, those long-term numbers look great. I wish we could take that five-year number and just lock it in and set it and move forward here. But even still, if you go out to 10 years, which would fully encompass the global financial crisis, given everything that happened that year, to have a 5.75% return out of the total fund is very strong. Moving down, I'm not going to talk about all of your managers, but I do want to point out a few of them. Wedge Capital had a very, very strong quarter. Year to date, they're a little bit behind the benchmark, but for the quarter, Wedge actually finished in the 25th percentile versus other large cap value managers. So they outperformed 75% of the other managers in that space. And long term, since you hired them in January of 2007, which, you know, anytime you have a number that includes the global financial crisis that's north of 5 or 6%, as I mentioned, it is a good thing. And you can see since you hired them, they're well ahead of the benchmark. Just about 140 basis points or so. Wellington, on the other hand, your large cap growth manager, has really kind of run into some difficult time this year. So you can see for the quarter, they underperformed by a little bit less than 1% and are about 2.5% or so behind the benchmark year to date. If we go back to page 48, just to kind of put a little bit of color around that, I don't want to jump around too much, but I just want to kind of put it in context a little bit. So while obviously the year-to-date results are not great, what I want you to look at is the Russell 1000 Growth Index and look at those rankings. Take off the quarter, but look at the rankings of the index over the year-to-date 1, 3, 5, 7-year time periods, even all the way out to 10 years. The index has outperformed active managers, more than 50% of the active managers in this space. So what does that tell you? That tells you that since the global financial crisis, really, active management has really had a difficult time outperforming benchmarks. I think we might kind of be ready for a little bit of a shift in that as we get more into a normalized sort of monetary Federal Reserve central bank policy. Of course, it's been, you know, with all the easing programs that have gone on over the last 7 years or so, you know, it's really been pretty accommodating. And so active managers have had a very difficult time keeping up with the benchmarks. But again, as I mentioned, I think that, you know, as we head into a little bit more of a normalized policy, period here, I venture to say that I wouldn't be surprised to see active managers come back and be able to, you know, add value that you pay them for over the benchmark. But I just wanted to add a little bit of color around that. Because I think even Andy mentioned it, you know, one of the hot topics over the last 5 years or so has been indexing through passive management. You know, to be honest with you, most plans that we work with have some level of indexing involved in their portfolio. Most of the time it's large cap. And they've certainly benefited from that over the last several years. But I think if you look historically, large caps, it's a little bit tougher to add value over the benchmark. But, you know, when you look in places like mid cap and small cap, that's where you want your active managers. That's where you want to take your active risk because you have a better chance of outperforming the benchmark. And I do think even in large cap, though, we're heading towards an environment that might be a little bit more, again, accommodating to those active managers than maybe it has been over the last 7 years or so. So get back to my spot here. So we just heard from Templeton. Acadian, your sole emerging market equity manager, has had a great year, as have all emerging markets. You can see for those 9 months ended September 30th, up over 17% for the year. The one-year number looks good as well. Since inception, they're ahead of the benchmark, which is a good thing considering the environment they've been working under over the last 3 or 4 years, where emerging markets have just simply been brutal. So it's nice to see a little bit of a reversal there, and they've taken advantage of that. Your two bond managers have really done a great job. So you look at Pyramus and Double Line. Pyramus had a great quarter. If we go back to, again, I need to jump around, but if we go back to page 73, again, just to put that into context a little bit to show you how well Pyramus has done. So for the quarter, Pyramus outperformed 97% of all other core fixed income managers. Year-to-date, outperformed 98% of the other managers, and if you just keep going out to the seven-year period, they are well ahead of the benchmark and well ahead of their peers as well. So that's been a very good selection and a good manager for you all. Double Line's been there a little bit, not as long, if you will. Still ahead of the benchmark since inception. Year-to-date, they're a little bit behind. They are, they're a very interesting manager. I think that in a rising rate environment, that's really where they're going to shine. They have a lot of tools, if you will, that they can use in terms of some of the plus sectors that they can go in. And I do think that in a rising rate environment, you're going to, again, see really strong performance out of them as well. As I mentioned, real estate, your real estate manager, UBS, a little bit behind the benchmark. Year to date, they're up about 5.5%. But again, over the long term, they've been delivering stellar results north of 10%. And again, if you go out to that since inception number, which does include the global financial crisis, they're still up over 8% annualized over that time period. So very strong results. Mentioned Wellington. They've gotten off to a good start for you. So since you hired them, which I guess went into effect in June, it looks like, they're ahead of the benchmark by about 50 basis points or so, maybe a little bit more, but 5.17% return over that time period. Atos, we've seen hedge funds make a little bit of a, I don't want to say comeback, but they've started to do a little bit better here more recently. You can see year to date, the Atos results aren't great, but I do see, you know, over the quarter up 2.77% ahead of your, both the 90-day T-bill plus 5% benchmark, and they are outperforming other multi-strategy hedge funds as well. I know that's kind of a, I don't know which way you lean on hedge funds, if you will. It's certainly been a difficult place to be. You're sort of looking for those equity-like returns with fixed income-like volatility, and we just haven't seen that. I think, again, that goes back to a lot of what I was talking about earlier with more accommodative central bank policy. But again, we still, as a firm, firmly believe that you know, hedge funds are an important and integral part of any portfolio. Certainly, you know, there's been a lot of pressure on fees there as well, and we've seen fees for hedge fund managers start to come down, which is always a good thing as well. And then if we flip back to page 31, this is all of your private investments, all of your private real estate investments, I should say. And if you just go, I don't focus on any of the short term, as you know, with these. It's all about, you know, since inception returns here. And if you look at those since inception returns, all of your managers have delivered great results. Long Wharf 5, which is at the bottom there, you see a negative return. It's too early to tell. They just started calling capital this year, and you're going to have a little bit of that J-curve effect where they're getting your money to work. But if you look at Penn, Colony, Town Square, all well above 10% returns. Town Square up almost 18 or over 18% over that time period. Very strong returns out of your private investments. And that's where, you know, we've seen a lot of our clients start to put money to work, is in real estate and private equity. As valuations in the equity markets here in the U.S. have become pretty rich, you know, it's kind of about where do we put our money. And we've seen a lot of that going into private real estate and private equity over the last probably 2 or 3 years. Real estate really over the last 4 or 5 years, but a lot of money flying into private equity over the last 2 or 3 years as well. And I'm going to just go to one more page, page 34. We already talked about the results of the total fund, but I just wanted to give you a picture of how you compare to all public plans less than $1 billion. That's the plan sponsor universe that we compare you to. So you can see for the quarter, you finished in the 16th percentile, outperforming 84% of other funds of a similar size. Year to date through September, outperforming about 60% or 60% of those plan sponsors, and then all the way out to the 5 and 7 year time period, you guys are, you know, performance has been very, very strong, outperforming, you know, 85% of the managers over 7 years with a 9% annualized return. So very strong results over the long term. And with that, I don't have anything else. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Hopefully, I'll get a chance to come see you all again next year at some point. Any questions? Comments? I get to go to Oklahoma, so I am headed to
Oklahoma.
To Orlando. From Orlando, fly through Atlanta, you know, wave to my house and the plane, and then get on a plane to go to Tulsa. So it's going to be a long day of travel for me, unfortunately.
Well, you're picking up, what, an hour or so?
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's right. So it's got a dinner tonight and a meeting tomorrow in Tulsa with it's actually a client that's been a client of ours for quite some time, but I'm joining the relationship, and so I get to go shake hands and meet a bunch of folks, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but it makes for a long day. I don't think I land until maybe 10 o'clock tonight, so.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like the Sky Miles, though. Sky Miles are good.
Yeah.
Any questions?
Nope, none.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you all having me. And if you have any questions in Rose's absence, I handed you all a business card. Please feel free to reach out. I know Alicia talks to some of the folks in our Atlanta office, but if there's anything else that you guys need, please feel free to shoot me an email, give me a call. It's always good to come to these meetings when you're sort of filling in, when there's good news to tell. You know, it's a lot better to come when the plan is doing well and outperforming than to have to come and try to explain underperformance. So that's a welcome sight for sure. Anything else?
Nope. Safe travel.
Okay, I appreciate it, everyone. You all have a great day.
Thank you.
Good, sir.
Lee, I guess I'll see you in not too long. A couple weeks?
Yes. Yep. A little bit south, right?
That's right. That's right.
Have a safe trip.
Thanks. Y'all have a good afternoon.
Lee, what you got new for us?
Well, you'll be pleased to hear just a couple real quick things. And none of it involves a pension plan or law or anything. We took care of that or a disability. I wanted to mention, did you all get the quarterly meeting dates for next year in your packages?
I have them here. We got them.
Okay. They're good with it. It's the same pattern we've been following for longer than I can remember. And the only other thing is, since I won't see you until February, financial disclosures again. The forms will, if they're not out now, they will be soon. So you can get those filed.
Yeah, I always wait till January, February. I've done it before.
Yeah, early in
before
the
year. Before that, and they lost it.
Yeah, I've heard sources.
Yeah,
of those stories.
So yeah. I just wait till January and then.
So that's it. I'm glad we got the disability, not that
way. Really? Just wait till the last minute before you get fined, huh? No, I can't think of anything. Jeff, are we all up to date with Lee? Does he owe us anything?
The summary plan description, I think that's the only thing that's...
Well, we were holding off on that until we see if anything's going to be done with the ordinance.
Nothing's going to be done with the ordinance.
Okay, well, that's
first. There's nothing pending with the ordinance. No.
Well, based on the tax review that we had from Wayne Snoller, and the letter was forwarded to the city.
The letter says that we are fully in compliance, and...
We're just letting it go.
We're good.
We're done.
Well, we've done all we can do.
We're done beating that dead horse.
We've done all we can do.
Well, from a state standpoint, you know, legally the city is responsible for any liability that would arise from the plan anyway. So it is a dead horse we've been beating for years.
Which dead horse?
The dead horse of, is the plan legal? Is the plan good? We hired a tax attorney.
We're talking about the tax attorney?
Yeah. Right. Yes.
We're just... Going to forget about it?
Well, we're going to say that
there's nothing to forget
about. No, it's a liability for all
stakeholders. As a stakeholder, as a city taxpayer, what you're saying is the liability is being deferred to me.
What I'm saying is that the liability has always been on the taxpayer as long as the plan's been in inception. So it's not a revelation.
That's why I'm here, to protect the taxpayer.
You're here to administer the plan as written by the city council. That's the board's role. The city council adopts the plan, the board administers the plan as written. That's the board's role. We went through this during, you know, review. The employee said, who's for me? The citizen, who's for me? Everybody back and forth. But the board's role is to the plan. Your responsibility is to the plan, period. And we had a tax review. We did ordinance changes in 2014. The DOR is okay. The state's okay. The auditors are okay. The board is the one who keeps saying, well, maybe we're not okay, but there isn't any evidence to support that we're not okay. We have opinion after opinion from firm after firm.
Right, and the bottom line is...
Right, the end of the day, city being
all liability falls on the city anyway, right. So, you know...
Well, and having additional letters doesn't mean anything. No. Like, I could get a letter from the IRS. That does not protect the city from liability. We're always going to be responsible.
Well, having heard that, I'll do a summary plan this
time. Council is comfortable, so... That's who I work for.
Yes. and all that I will say is I think when I got on the board, I was one of the big notifiers of everyone that the trustee's responsibility is to the plan. Right?
Yes. Yes, you were actually.
You know, but again, you know.
Council is liable to the citizens.
You can bring your personal agenda, but we're going to straighten you out.
And I'm not comfortable. I mean, they're comfortable that the plan is legal and sound. The DOR has not raised a single red flag. You know, pension finances have been fully audited for years in a row. There's been no red flags raised. So I think we're looking for a problem that's not actually in existence at this point. Now, pension reform notwithstanding, you know, I can't say that there'll ever be pension reform again, and that would precipitate ordinance changes, because the IBEW has requested in January to reopen the contract and negotiate pension reform once again. But to me, you know, statutorily, we should have a summary plan review, so we need to do that and not just keep waiting for something to change. You know, barring IBEW being able to bring us savings that are substantial, I don't really see council changing it anyway, anything. You know, we've seen their plan that they have. I don't know if you guys have gotten, you've seen it. It's even worse than the one that,
yeah.
It's even worse than the
they don't have anything to bring to the table.
So, I think we're okay. Council said they have no plan to change anything. And I said, okay, thank you so much.
Write out the bird.
Now that I know that, I'll do a final estimate.
So, if the plan is not right as far as IRS is concerned, the city will be absorbing the tax liability that all of the employees of the cities incur that are covered under this plan.
That would be the city's liable for all liabilities as a result. The IRS did not, I mean, we had that IRS lady do it in 2004. We made the two changes to the ordinance that she recommended.
Well, I thought this was going to be a major area of discussion. Based on our review, we recommend the board seek assurance that this program satisfies all federal requirements, including but not limited to the definitely determinable benefits rules and the pre-ERISA vesting standard. And if it doesn't comply with those, the tax ramifications of the plan are all to the employee.
Yes, and we submit our plan to the DOR each year that reviews it against those IRS rules, and they're good.
Right.
Who?
The DOR, the Department of Revenue for the State of Florida. We submit our plan.
Well, I don't want to go there, but I thought that they had said was that's not their bailiwick.
They review our plan for compliance.
With what?
With state.
The federal tax requirements?
They've gone to the IRS. There's, Bernie, you're beating the dead horse. There is nothing subject to ERISA.
Yeah, I've been keen on this because I may have been the one that initially brought it up. So,
right. And council is comfortable, according to their attorney, Jim Land, that the plan is sound, it's stable, it meets all federal requirements. So they are not going to do anything.
Yeah, and the bottom line, the city absorbs all responsibility anyway. I mean, when they change the plan, they absorb.
We have responsibility to the plan, not to the city.
Right, to the plan, but the bottom line is the city still funds the whole thing.
And the taxpayer is the one that funds the city.
Well, yeah, you should look at it that way, but that's the city's responsibility to deal with the taxpayer. The taxpayers decide that, you know, they're...
When we have a taxpayer revolt, we will deal with it at that time. That has not...
This meeting is being recorded, correct?
If that were the case, if it came to council, we would deal with it, or council would deal with it at that time.
Right.
But there's not an issue. There's not an issue been raised. There's no issues with the plan. So we keep having tax attorney review after tax attorney review. I don't know how many times we're going to review the same plan.
And the bottom line, it's costing us money every time.
With the same outcome that, you know, it's fine, but, you know, maybe get assurance from who? Well, we're not required to have an IRS letter of assurance. And an IRS letter of assurance does not protect you from liability. Because they can turn around and say, oh, well, they've changed their mind because they're...
I disagree. If you get a determination letter from the Internal Revenue Service, they're bound by the determination letter. But you know, again, let's not be the dead horse. And I speak from experience because I deal with determination letters. But again, you know, I had no idea that all of a sudden this was, you know, this had all gone away. But I'll be quiet.
Well, I wasn't aware until today, which is why I didn't do an update on SPD.
Alicia and I had a few emails in Oklahoma City, and we now feel like we agree with Cindy. I mean, it's the city's responsibility. If there's anything wrong, that they have to write it. They have to own up to the citizens if there's an issue. That becomes, you know, something serious. The city's taking on all the extra, you know, money they had to encumber when the plans were changed by their direction and their design. So they haven't had to explain that to the citizens, so therefore, you know, the sad part is the citizens are really not in touch with what's going on, but they're making the plan stay whole. I mean, for right now, there are two different plans. Actually, there's three different plans if you want to look at it, but it's chugging along. I mean, our job here is to the actual pension plan and make sure that it's looking good.
We are
waiting for an experience study, which Doug is going to bring to us in February, and we're going to know where we are, and we have to know if maybe we should change back some of our, you know, our numbers as far as what our risk is. But that's the bottom line, is we're just trying to keep the plan rolling along and keeping it whole and making sure that we meet Tallahassee's, you know, expectations of what we think we should be with, you know, looking for returns. If we don't hit a return, the city still has to fork up the money, you know, to keep the plans. Yeah. So, I mean, we have a few emails, and I say let's just move on. It's tiresome, and we're just spending money and gyrations for Lee, and he sits and waits for direction, and it is what it is. I mean, it's like people have asked me, you know, are there ever any plans that maybe they'll change the pension back? And I'm like, absolutely not. I mean, they're just going to ride it out, and they know it's going to be another 15 years before what they're paying. And if you look at what they're paying in pension, I mean, some of us know, but I mean, it's huge. I don't know, Anthony, if you get into that kind of, you know, mostly because you deal with the bargaining unit instead, but I mean, what are they, Cindy? Over 96% now.
It's over 100% now of payroll.
Of payroll going into pension. I mean, it's huge. And they just have to eat it. I mean, the only thing I see that they could ever want to change is maybe have another early buyout to try to change these numbers. I mean, that's the only other way they could do it, but it would cost them a lot up front to do that.
There's so many participants that the plan is the issue. So that's why, I mean, you guys elected the switch to level dollar funding, which makes more sense, because as your plan participants drop, your percentage of payroll is obviously going to increase because it's just algebra. So total dollars that the city has paid for the first time this year went down. It was a hair, but it went down a little bit, even though percentage of payroll was up.
unfunded liabilities are down beautifully since the switch to the plan. I mean, we were up at 105 million, we're at 95 million now. So the plan design is unorthodox, but it's doing as it was designed to do. So we're not costing the taxpayers more money, we're actually saving them money by the plan design.
That's not my dispute.
Well,
my dispute is, is it a qualified
right.
plan, because it has big tax ramifications for the plan,
right.
since we represent the employees that are in the plan.
We don't have concern, and really,
for the plan, is I was worrying about the employees, because if it's not really tax deferred,
correct.
It's like, do the employees have to pay all this back tax money? Correct. And the city says, we'll take care of it. And it's like, okay, move on. I mean, you know, that they went and got their outside consultants and, you know, contractors to give them direction. They decided to go with it. And I think they were blindsided. They got hurt big time by what it actually cost them.
We had made an inquiry, did we not, to find out what other city had done this and what their if they had concerns.
One other in Florida did, and that was Palm Beach, and that was done by
Jim and Jim,
just like it's been here. And in the course of conversations, it was mentioned that there was one other one in the country somewhere.
Wisconsin or Minnesota or somewhere else.
Somewhere up there. Yeah.
That's just like this, and there are many variable plans, but that are designed the way.
With the corridors.
Where this one is designed. And the one in another state has been in existence for many more years ahead of our plan, which is what they modeled after, and it's never been shown.
So the bottom line is we're at the max. The employees are getting 1% and they're going to get 5% now.
Right. This is the worst.
In October.
That's about October, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We're at the bottom of the rut. There is no lower for the employees.
Right.
And which means then if there's anything
That's what I say. Nothing to look forward to but up.
But the bottom line is the city still has to fund it. And that's where it is. I mean,
One in five, there was still money owed outside of that, so we had to strip the check on top of that. So, and we expect it to hang around there until it doesn't.
And I mean, just to fill you guys up, I mean, like, so we have a few left that are in the drop. We have two that are leaving next month. And that's probably over $1 million we're going to pay out. It's $1.2 million. Mm-hmm. Right around that. Maybe a little bit over. I forgot. There's three people leaving, right?
There's a couple.
Yeah. There's Gene. There's Frank
Drago.
Yeah. And one other, right? So the money's there to pay them their lump sums of their drop and we keep on moving. I mean, there's still a few more people. There's only a few more people left in the drop. And I mean, I look at that stuff all the time, just so you know that, you know, they'll tell you, I challenge them all the time. I need these numbers. I want to see, you know. It's,
and from a liability standpoint for the plan, going forward, things are actually looking well, because you've got some old plan design changes that the amortization of those drop off in the next 3 to 5 years. You have multiple millions of liability dropping off. So that 1 in 5 could reverse, you know, in the next few years as those liabilities drop off and the plan's in better shape. So there's only to go up from here. So they're getting a 1% multiplier now, plus they're hurt HR. I mean, you know, I'm constantly reminding employees, if you're in this variable plan, you are in the DB, which means you have a 3% COLA in perpetuity on that check. So the year that you leave is the least amount of money you're ever going to make in your retirement.
Right.
That's right.
The taxpayers who pay this plan cannot say that, but our employees can, despite the dislike for this Part B of their check, because that Part A of their check has a 3% COLA in perpetuity for life. So the very first check they get will be the lowest check they will ever receive during their retirement.
So over 50% of the employees jumped and went to the defined contribution, the 401k type plan.
And they don't have that protection.
And now all of a sudden they realize they have exempted themselves from being the ability to go into the drop.
Right.
If they wanted to stay. I mean, that's something that just happened.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's also, you have to look at 50% of the people that money that was going into the pension is gone now, right, too. So that's why the city's obligation has gone way up. Mm-hmm. And somehow that got missed. I mean, they really didn't plan on how many people might want to jump ship. And it really hurt the city for not really investigating that piece or doing surveys first. But
right,
nobody knew it was on the table. I mean, some people decided to stay. And I mean, I talked to a few people and said, you know, a guaranteed 1%. Is still better than playing the stock market. When we look what happened in 08, which is unprecedented, and as we look at 7-year cycles, it's like, damn, we were due for another drop, and it's not happened. So what does that mean?
Right.
And now, I mean, that's the bottom line. It's unprecedented. Nobody knows anymore. So the 7-year cycle that we used to know for years and years and years is gone. So now it's like, what's it going to take? I mean, we see, you know, a president election, everything dropped and it came back up, but it didn't come up as much as it dropped, and people just don't understand that stuff. I mean, they try to look at 08, how much we've dropped. I mean, 35 to 38, some people 40%. Well, they might be up 30%, but they're still down 10%. I mean, it's...
Right, net, or so high, yeah.
So, I mean, that's really the bottom line. Bernie, is the city, you know, is obligated to keep it whole, to keep the plan whole until the last person is gone. And I haven't challenged Jessica to give me that number, but I wonder, you know, who the youngest person is in the last, in the plan, and, you know, then go get with the actuary what the mortality rate is, and then you tell the city, well, you've got about 60 more years to make sure that it's whole. I mean, but that's a number that I'm kind of curious about now.
I imagine it might be somewhere in the actual report, because that's how they're coming up with the unfunded liability and all that, you know, based on how long they expect the plan participants to live. You know, we've had more retirements than we anticipated. We had a bunch more deaths than we anticipated.
Right.
It was like we had a rash of people died. It was like, what's going on? You know, so the plan experience has been a little odd the last year. But, I mean, overall, it's moving in the right direction.
Well, since we're still talking about it, if the plan doesn't qualify for tax purposes, it really isn't the city's liability.
It is the city's
liability. Because the funds in the plan are the funds in the plan. What's going to happen is they're going to get a 1099 reflecting the tax result of all of that money being taxable to them. So I'm back to the plan.
But it goes to the city.
Yes, that notification would come to us before that happened. It wouldn't just randomly get a
check. I agree.
Well in advance, and the IRS would not just take our plan and say, oh, it's unqualified. There would be some negotiation back and forth.
I agree.
The tax status,
I agree.
What will we do to change it? And so, again, we are looking at, if I'm looking at a bell curve, this is such an outlier to what doesn't factor into my calculation. Because it just, it would be unprecedented for that to happen. So we can't build into a system something that's such a remote possibility. It's just not. We have spent more than enough money on lawyers and tax attorneys who have differing opinions. Ours say yes, yours don't say no. I still didn't say your plan didn't qualify. They said, well, we don't really know, so just check it out. Well, so, I mean, I don't get my hair on fire from somebody who says, well, maybe just check it out. Our consultant checked it out, and they are confident that we're good. I mean, you know, I may not like the plan that Rizzo put into place, but they are consummate professionals who have been doing this a very long time. And the thought that they would stake their careers on something that wasn't legal or proper, I just don't. I don't see that.
That's really not where I'm coming from. You know, what I'm coming from is that there is a process, and it's called getting a determination letter from the Internal Revenue Service.
We've never had a determination letter in the existence.
We've never
of
done
the
this to a plan that is so.
Well, so we looked at our existing plan, and there's no letter of determination.
Right.
I mean, we've gone and researched that too.
Yeah.
It's unnecessary.
Yeah.
for a governmental plan. I mean, we're not subject to ERISA. I mean, there's, it's unnecessary. And our plan is still a defined benefit plan. There's still a guaranteed benefit. I can tell every participant what their guaranteed benefit is. Their minimum benefit is how they have the ability to calculate. So there's no issue.
Well, there is, but we're not going to worry about it.
Well,
there is for you, and that's your opinion, and you're
right,
entitled to it.
Like I said, you know, it's, let's move on then. Unless there's any more discussion about this, we're good. Has anyone read the minutes? Any issues with them? Motion to accept the minutes as they are?
Second.
All right. All those four? Yes, okay. I'm not sure the assurance letter.
That was that.
That we just had the discussion about, right. So I thought maybe there's something else. Anything else for discussion?
Now we will. Does the board want to know if IBEW presents us with plans or, I mean...
You know, until it impacts us, let the city deal with it. I mean...
I just didn't know if you guys wanted to, you know...
Well, you know, they interjected once.
I can brief you.
Yeah, they interjected once when I went out to all the employees and did a survey and asked if they wanted to maybe pay a little bit more to change this, you know, this guarantee and the variable rate. The problem is so many jump ship, and now they're stuck where they went. I mean, there's a few that are disheartened that, you know, we didn't know that the drop would be added back in, and it's like...
No, because the drop was limited to 2010.
Right.
So it was, I mean...
Well, it's like I deal with old retirees, you know, it's like they say, well, I need more money, and it's like, you know, sorry, we're not making that much more money, but you know what was on the table when you decided you wanted to retire. And I mean, as cold as it is what it is. I mean, you should plan your finances and understand that the only thing you can't control is that cost of living, and we know it's going to keep on going up. When you decide you're done working and you want to go, you know, it's like, change your lifestyle a little bit. I don't know what else to tell these poor souls, and I understand some of them are... Motion to adjourn?
Adjourn.
Good deal.
Good to see you all. Happy Thanksgiving.